Being that tomorrow is Mother's Day, I thought it would be appropriate to go ahead and give a sermon on mothers. And it's a very corrective sermon. I'll let you know in advance. I wanted you to be edified and comforted. So I thought, why not just tell all of us what our mothers are doing wrong? Wouldn't that be a horrible sermon? So it's not going to be that way at all. Although in reading this, whether it be a sermon on fathers for Father's Day, or fathers anytime that we would give a sermon, or children, or mothers, there's always going to be instruction from the Bible. I think we all know that. That God is a comforting, edifying God. He's very merciful and he's very kind. And so we are very thankful that he gives us that instruction. The word honor is, as far as honoring your mother or your father, is mentioned 9 times in the Bible, and most of it is a repeat of the commandment. And then there's one addition to that, and we'll go to Ephesians 6:2. I think all of us remember the commandment. In the Lutheran church, it was the fourth commandment. And in the Catholic church, it's the fourth commandment. But as we know, it's the fifth commandment, and it's the only commandment with promise, as we'll see. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 2. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 2. And it is interesting that that is the only commandment with promise, because all commandments are equally as strong, and we are supposed to be obedient to every single one of the commandments. But it is interesting that the one on honor a parent is the only one with promise, which tells us that there's something that happens when we begin training our children to respect mother and father. Now, some of you were raised, probably most of you were raised in a family atmosphere where you had to obey your mother and father. And you knew nothing else by the time you could talk. You knew that you couldn't talk back. Now, every child will probably do that. I'm not saying they won't. But in our family, it was, and I think it was that way with my mother and dad's family also. I do know my dad having 9 siblings, I believe. When he got up from the table, he had to ask his father to be excused from the table, and his father would always tell him, and then the rest of the boys, when they asked, because each one had to ask, go and tell your mother what a good meal it was. And so that was just the way it was in his family, and they would have to go. In fact, my father, to the day, always, every meal, when he got up from the table, he went over to my mother, he gave her a kiss on the cheek, if they were getting along, and they were most of the time. And it was, thank you, dear, for the meal. And it's amazing the different cultures. And they all sat together. They ate breakfast together, supper together. I'm not sure about lunch, just because of the atmosphere in which they lived. My dad was a coal miner when I was born. So I suppose they may have gone into their long table and ate together also. So it depends on, you know, the structure of the family. Now, I don't do that unless we have cornbread, then I will give my wife a kiss. She'll get it before I even eat the cornbread. So I'm not following my dad's example totally, but it is something that we're raised with, isn't it? That respect and honor for a parent. And in my family, and I'll just tell you, maybe I've said it before, but it won't hurt. My family, we knew that you never, ever, ever talked back to your parent. It just was not something that you would want to do. And by the way, my father only popped me in the gluteus maximus once, just one time, because I disrespected my mother. That's the only time. Because we just didn't disobey our parents, except the time I disobeyed my mother and got a whack in my gluteus from my dad. So again, this is something where God tells us, and he tells all mankind, if they would read, if they're Christian at least, or even if they are nominal Christian and know the commandments, they would read this, and it says, honor your mother and father, and the parents would make sure that that happens. And the mother is one who can enforce that too. And the way we do it usually as parents is if there's a dishonoring of a father, the mother would say, kids, you don't do that. And vice versa, if there's a dishonoring of the mother, the father would come to the aid, even if the child might be right. If the child would dishonor the mother or the father who's giving the instruction, you would want to make sure and back up the mate. And then you privately go into the room and say, you know, honey, I think maybe we should have backed up the child on that one, so you can work together on those types of things. But honoring parents is the one with promise, because what is the child going to do? They're going to think, well, my mom and dad told me when I was young to look both ways before I crossed the street. You know, little things like that. You're going to save a life, aren't you? And so it involves every instruction, especially that concerns life and death, but even more so, it's an attitude that you ingrain in a child. And I've told people, if you get past the age of 3, it's going to be much harder. So the earlier, the better. I've read in child-rearing books that, actually, we've had a course in the church in United. We went through this with the parents, and it was, it wasn't prepare and enrich, that's for marriage, but it was basically preparing to be a parent. And basically, it was a very good course on teaching children. And in that course, it said that children are not going to understand why. So you don't necessarily need to tell them why. But you know, the more I think about that, even if they're young, I think to explain why from early on, even if they don't understand it, go ahead and say, no, this is not, you don't want to do that. And go ahead and tell them. It's not going to hurt to tell them why that you are doing this, because they'll grow up with knowing why they should be obeying the command that you give them, or the instruction, or the help that you're giving them. So Ephesians 6 and verse 2 says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. So God does look at honor. If children are to honor their parents, then both deserve honor, and they deserve it from their mother or their father who's honoring their mother. Let's put it that way. The children are going to follow our examples, we know. And if a husband does not honor their wife, guess what's going to happen? The kids are going to chime right in, and they're not going to honor their mother either. So the father has a lot to do with making sure that the wife is honored. Okay. And again, any problems that are in a marriage, in fact, I think I've heard many times where kids say, you know, I only saw my parents disagree one time or four times in my entire life. And you know that they disagreed more than that. In any marriage, if you don't ever disagree, you don't have a mind of your own. So you're going to have to disagree. Like, don't quote me on that. That you have to disagree. You don't have to. But you know what I mean. You just will. You just will. But it's the way we work it out that is so important. And even that's going to show us how much we honor our wife, because we're going to be gentle, be kind, and both parties will be that way. When we are dealing with each other, because there are a lot of things. I know my wife did say, before she said this after we got married, she said, you know, I told people that my future husband is going to be the easiest person to submit to ever. She just said, I saw her lip it too. I said that, she said. And it was true, wasn't it? No. No, it's men don't think the same as women. Women don't think the same as men. So the way we work out situations is either honorable before God or it's not. So let's go to a basic here in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. We see that in verse 18, of Genesis chapter 2, God said, I will make a help meet for you. He said, first of all, it is not good to be alone, is what he said. It is not good to be alone. Now, we could ask the question, was there something missing? And the answer is, well, God doesn't say that, actually. God doesn't say that Adam is missing something, but God did know that he would need help, that a mate would be tremendous, and it would be good support, and it would be neat, it would be proper. I think the word, this word is Hebrews, if you're interested, 58:28, but it's a Hebrew word, basically, that is translated help most of the time. I think it's only translated help meet twice, but we know that the man would need to be helped. The man would need to be helped. And there's a, by the way, I'll just mention that sometimes men don't want to be helped the way the wives think they need help. So it takes a lot of wisdom to know concerning help. Is it going to be of help? And that's what every woman has to ask. Is this going to help? And every woman wants to help their husband because you're made to do that. That's just part of your makeup. It's not the, well, men want to help their wives too. I'm not saying they don't. But when God said you need a help mate, or meet better yet, then women are just, they want to help. They absolutely do want to help. And some men don't want to be helped because we've grown up in this very independent age. And women are like, well, how she's supposed to get the food on the table? And she's supposed to, why do I need any help? You know, I don't need any help. And I found myself, when Marion wants to help me find something, is I've lost things, you know, keys that I put on the top of cupboards that I haven't found in a year, and Marion will say, can I help you? And it's like, no, I don't need any help. It'll basically, a man's idea, as far as I'm concerned, is it's going to show up sometime. Why waste the time looking for it? I mean, you can look for it a little bit, but overall, I don't want my wife to have to take, you know, and take time out to help me when I'm the one that lost it. But you know, it's in the mind of a wife to want to help. It just is. And we're not, we're independent creatures. We men are, but we do need help. And we should appreciate it. So that word help is mentioned 19 times, and it does mean help. In fact, if you look at it, the word help means delivered from. So it's used in the Bible. And I'm not saying now that women are delivering their mate from, okay? But sometimes a woman can deliver a mate from trouble if they're going to do things that the wife thinks, oh no, I think that's going to get him in trouble. So I'm kind of extending the real meaning of some of these things. This one meant deliver from the sword, which means that if somebody attacks your husband, step in front of them and you take the blow. No, it doesn't mean that at all. But it's from enemies. Its shield is used quite a bit. But strengthen, edify are two good words for help. Strengthen, edify. Profit is another one where the word help comes in. To profit them. And so women are there, and when it comes to submission, you know, this word where we know God says a wife is to subject themselves, it's a voluntary subjection, is the meaning of that word. It's not something where we command our wife that they must get down on one knee and call us Lord. Okay, so it doesn't mean that at all. Subjection is voluntary subjection. Where if a wife is going to help the mate, there will be times when it's impossible to help the mate if the mate, you know for sure the mate is not going to be helped. the maid is just going to get in trouble. It was Mr. Neff's father who said, sometimes the wife has to just sit back and let the husband get in trouble. It's the only way they may learn. Now, you should say, oh, honey, I don't think so. But if a parent wants to, or a father, husband in this case, wants to do something that badly, then they're going to do it. How can they be stopped? We don't control each other in a marriage. The husband does not control the wife. The wife does not control the husband. And we all know that we can't make our mate change. We can influence them to change, but we can't make them change. So husbands, we have a God-given help that most of the time would be really, really good. There may be times where a wife might not help. Advice may not be good, certainly. But at the same time, overall, and most of the time, a wife is a very good help. Then we come down to Genesis 2:23, where God says, Adam says, I should say, bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. So, as we know, same flesh, same bone. That's pretty easy to understand. And then Adam called his wife woman. So anytime we hear the name woman, it's Ish calling the newly created female wife, came out of his rib, Isha. Okay, so Ish says, well, I'm going to call her Isha, coming out from a man. And that's what that means. And of course, that's God let Adam name all of the creation. I don't say creatures because the wife isn't a creature, so we come back on that a little bit. But we know that the woman was there, and she is bone of bone, flesh of flesh, and they pretty much look alike overall. And I don't know what I'm going to do in the world tomorrow when I'm changed to a spirit being and I look like a woman. Is that what God's going to do? And the answer is, I don't think so. It'll be interesting what we look like as immortal beings. I think we'll recognize each other very well. I know we will. But it'll be interesting. Okay, well, basically that's kind of the start of it. And that very important word, help, should be a word that causes honor to be given to the mate. Honor to be given to the mate. Now, we don't always do that. We just don't. We can be in an attitude. We can be really irritated with somebody else, and we take it out on our mate. That happens. We have nothing against our mate. It's, what did I do? Although my wife, I don't think, has ever done that. She's never pulled a gun either. She's never done that. Okay. At all, of course. That's not what we do. But we do know that we can be irritated, and we don't mean to take it out on our mate, but sometimes it is possible. I think irritation means that we haven't handled the problem the way we should have in the first place. But whatever the case, we know that the honor does go to a created being that God made to help us out. Okay, what does a wife do to help out her husband and the family? Because it's not just for the husband, it's the family. There's an article by Mr. Gore that I read recently, this morning. In fact, we just got the magazine a couple days ago, and I hadn't read that. But he put in there, teaches daughters, a wife teaches the daughters, by example, we might add, how to be a wife and a mother. As we know, and I put example in all of these, and I'm sure Mr. Gore did too, if I would have read it or taken note. But the kids will follow the example. Kids will follow the example. So the way that the mother treats the husband, or a grandpa, or a mother-in-law, or a father-in-law, all of that is very important. So we teach by example. So how do mothers want their daughter to be a good wife and a good mother? So it's up to the mother and father, too. The father has a lot to do with this. Supporting her husband, always backing her husband up as much as is possible. And again, there's always ways to do that, even if we disagree. We teach sons how to treat women with respect. That was one of his other points. We can go to 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5. It says, verse 3, I thank God whom I serve with pure conscience, as my forefathers did, as without ceasing I remember you in my prayers day and night, greatly desiring to see you, being mindful of your tears, that I may be filled with joy. When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in you also. So here you have a mother and a grandmother teaching a son who's not a Jew. Remember, Timothy's father was Gentile, meaning just not in the church of in the Old Testament. That's all that means. Wasn't following God's way of life. Whether the mother was still married to the man, I don't know, but seemingly we're not saying that he wasn't. So he had a father, let's just say he did, but it was the mother and the grandmother who had that faith. And you know that they were teaching Timothy, and he was a very tender-hearted child too, because Paul later on says, I don't know anybody that has more of that inclination to help others than Timothy. Titus wasn't that way. Luke followed him for a while. Mark followed him for a while. And he didn't say that of Luke or Mark. But Timothy, there's just something about Timothy. He was a tender-hearted soul. And that's not just because his mother raised him. It's because the mothers had a right influence on him. A mother can be very instrumental in helping a child to have that sensitivity. And it did work with Timothy. Isaiah 66 and verse 13. Another word was comfort. A mother is there to comfort. Isaiah chapter 66. Go the right way here. Isaiah chapter 66 and verse 13. Now, I am using scriptures, at least a couple, that were in Mr. Gore's article. So it's not plagiarizing here, just going to the scripture that I thought would be very helpful for all of us today. 66:13, and we could start in verse 12. Behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the Gentiles like a flowing stream. Then you shall feed on her sides, shall you be carried, and be dandled on her knees. As one whom his mother comforts, so will I comfort you, and you shall be comforted in Jerusalem. And of course, you can go to, I think it's Isaiah 40, where it begins to say, comfort, comfort you, my people. Remember that? Because Jerusalem had paid double for its sins. But here we see a direct analogy or comparison with what a mother does. And a mother does this, and there's that tenderness, and it's like God. God, our Father in heaven, has this attitude to comfort us. So mothers teach, they support, they teach sons, they teach daughters, and they comfort, mothers edify, and we men just don't do all of that. I remember when we were married, probably by this time, let's see, I think it was, we were in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we were in Rio Rancho Estates at the time, and that would have been 1972, 71. So I won't say how, our daughter is not here today, so I won't say how old she was. But our son was under my desk. So I'm sitting at this desk, and Dean is under the desk, and he stands up under the desk and bumps his head. He would have been 3 years old at the time, probably two and a half at the time. And he stands up and he starts crying. And I didn't reach down and pick him up and comfort him. I said, "You can do it, Dean. Get down on your knees, crawl a little bit more." And he crawled a couple, you know, and stood up again, hit his head under the desk. And so as a father, I'm doing the right thing. I'm telling him what the solution is. A mother is not going to do that, probably. A mother is going to grab the little boy, pick him up, he's crying, say, "It's okay, Dean, it's fine." And I know my wife would have picked him up. But the father is like, "Oh, here's a lesson. I can teach Dean how to, you know, crawl from under a desk and then stand up." I don't know if all men are like that, but it wasn't that I was tender. It's not, I didn't get upset with him at a time. I thought, you know, "You can do it. You can do it." So I don't know what my dad did to me. I should have asked my mom. But anyway, it was a teaching moment for me, and we don't do that. You know, you don't let a child that age, you know, keep hitting his head. You immediately go to their aid. So I'm just saying, women have that tenderness that we men sometimes don't have, and we need to honor them for it and be thankful that they're that way. And be thankful that a woman is more sensitive. Maybe not all the time. Sometimes we throw these ideas out that a woman is more sensitive than a man. Or is he more emotional? I don't think a woman is more emotional. I think a woman just expresses their emotions differently. But certainly you see those emotions. And God made women, in fact, I think I've probably told you before, but do you want to hear my wisest saying of ever in the entire world? My wisest saying, it is, a woman is a woman is a woman is a woman. Isn't that wise? Either that or it's very stupid. I don't know. But you start to think of it, and a man is a man is a man is a man. And we are to honor the way God made us, and a wife is there to help. So, again, teaching, comforting, edifying, all of those things are so very important. We take the example of Sarah, who is one of the best examples in the Bible. By the way, I looked it up on Google. It is so fast. By the way, if you have a Bible application, it is very fast to look things up, and it almost takes us away from knowing where is what in the Bible. But I did look into the computer this morning, and I asked what the 10 best mothers that you can find in the Bible. And I went down, and it's like, Hagar? Hagar was one of them. Now, she wasn't a bad mother. I'm not saying she was, but it's not the one that we would normally go to. And she was in a precarious position, too, because of the fact it wasn't her fault that the son was born at all. Sarah didn't like her, and the boy was not really the best behaved at all. But whatever the case, I thought, well, normally we don't go to Hagar. But she stuck in there. I guess you would say she was an example of following God and doing what she was supposed to do, and it turned out pretty good. But Sarah is one we know is mentioned in the Bible quite often. Genesis 18 and verse 15. Genesis 18 and verse 15. And here we can see that Sarah, who was a woman that all should follow. Now, according to 1 Peter chapter 3, we see it says, like Sarah, who called her husband Lord, set an example. It was basically in that era, the Lord would not have been an unusual term. It would have been used by many, no doubt. Here, I don't think you want to go around calling your mate or your husband Lord. How many do that every day? You know, we just don't use that term at all. But it was a term of respect, is what it was. And so she respected her husband, and she subjected herself to her husband. That means she voluntarily submitted. And by the way, she wanted to get rid of Ishmael, and Abraham didn't. Wanted Ishmael and Hagar to move out, And God said, no, listen to your wife, Sarah. So here you have Sarah, who's a woman, highly respected by God. And she wants that family to move, to leave, and God backs her up. Now, you think, well, that wasn't very kind. That wasn't very nice. But sometimes when you think, well, what's going to disrupt the family? Sometimes there have to be decisions that God understands are fine. And if you're going to have peace in that family, even though there's been problems, you know, Sarah was one of the ones who said, well, you can have a child by my handmaid. So it wasn't Hagar's fault. But anyway, you can see the mind of God in this judgment. So husbands, we may not think our wife is right. We may not. But, you know, just because we don't understand her mind and the decision that she would come to, it's like, no, there's a disruption in the family there. Sarah knew it was not going to be good for the family, even though in this society we'd say, well, no, you wouldn't send a child away. Guess what? God said, yep, follow your wife. Although I'm not going to that example here, I'm going to Genesis chapter 18, I believe, and verse 15. Genesis 18 and verse 15. Let's go there. Genesis chapter 18 and verse 15. So here we have Sarah, and in this society, maybe in the church, we would be righteous over much, I guess we could say. You know, the Ecclesiastes says, don't be righteous over much. So here you have verse 15. When the angel is saying, look, Sarah's going to have a baby. And Sarah hears it, and she laughs. And then the angel comes up to her, or the Lord, it says, and Sarah denies it, saying, I did not laugh. Now, how would we take that? Would we be so righteous that we wouldn't understand that when someone denies it, it was... Now, in one sense, she wasn't taking God's name in vain, I know, okay, but we, just lying, not telling the truth, we say, oh, we shouldn't do that. But, you know, there was no harm to anybody but Sarah. So the Lord was not really tough on her. You know, go to your room, Sarah. You can't watch TV, Sarah, or whatever. So it was one of those things where you see an attitude where God looked on things and realized, well, you know, she was nervous, and she denied it because she was afraid. And you take a look at things like this, and it's like, you know, it'd be nice to have the mind of God. And I don't think God was too picky. There was no harm except to herself. And so you have to think of these things when you read the Bible and see some of the examples that is set for us. But she is a woman of God, and she's afraid. She denies it. She knew she laughed. But anyway, well, the Lord said, no, you did laugh. And I think probably Sarah didn't say anything more on that one. So we realize these things, and human beings, and I hope husbands and wives are not too hard on each other. And we honor our wife, we honor our husband. Okay, then we see here in 1 Peter 3, I gave you the example there, so I'm not going to turn to it, but we do see that Sarah was a woman of God. And she absolutely had that respect for her husband. And no doubt, Abraham had respect for her. Okay, let's go on to an example that Naomi set, and we're not going to talk about Ruth, although we probably could, but Ruth at this time was not a mother, and Naomi was, and set a very good example here in what she did. If you want to talk about a matchmaker, read about Naomi. So, do not be upset if your mother-in-law makes you a match, okay? She's a matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find, okay? That should be a movie. And it is. Ruth 2. Ruth. Judges Ruth chapter 2. And notice a very wise woman. Now, we might tell our wife, honey, don't get involved. Don't get involved with that. But you know, there was nobody to tell Naomi not to get involved. And a woman, is it a proclivity for wives to make matches for their kids? I think so. We guard our kids. We say, oh, yeah, that's a good one. I remember trying to make dates for our kids, you know. Of course, if they went to a movie, we actually went to the movie, too, and sat right behind them if they were 16 years old, if they were that young, you know. So anyway, and if they're really young, I suppose I would still recommend that. So you have in chapter 2 and verse 2, Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, notice now what she's doing. Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor. And she said, go, my daughter. So she sees something and she okays this potential marriage. Naomi probably is thinking a long time before. But let's skip ahead to verse 23. Chapter 2 and verse 23. It would be verse 22. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, because if you read the story, Boaz did have eyes for her, and that people do not meet you in any other field. Okay, just stick around that field. So Naomi is saying that to Ruth. She's a wise woman. She's a wise woman. And there are ways of wisdom that are with women that men don't have. So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Chapter 3 and verse 1. Naomi, her mother-in-law said, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you? Well, so we would say to a child, you know, son, there's this woman who is has a good education. Well, in this case, I'll use a son. And she's making a lot of money. If your business fails, you can depend on her. Well, not so bad, you know. You want both ways for your son, daughter to marry well. It doesn't have to have anything to do with finances, of course. But you just see this attitude now. Shall I not seek security for you? A parent wants a child to have security. And it could be just marrying a nice person. You know, that's security. So we don't want to get too upset if our parents get involved a little bit. And this, in this case, and it's a different culture here too, but Ruth didn't seem to mind it at all. So Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the fresh threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the... Can you imagine this happening in these days? This is like, here, I want you to... take a shower. I want you to get in your best garment, and I want you to go up there when they finished eating and drinking, and he's gone to bed, and I want you to just pull the covers off his feet and lay at his feet. It's like, now back then, that was probably sending a very strong message, wouldn't you think? Probably. But that's not going to happen today, and no parent is going to, in this society, no parent is going to ever have that happen. It's like, oh, brother. And if your kids say, I'm just following the Bible example, and it's like, no, God didn't mean it that way totally. It's you can get different principles out of it. So anyway, she did. And it was really dark because even when he uncovered She uncovered his feet. Then basically he had gone to sleep. It was dark and he startled. He wakes up and he said, "Who are you?" But once he found out it was Ruth and realized that there was a relative relationship there, he knew based on whatever the standard was back then what to do. But it's just an example, brethren, of a wise woman. She did what was wise concerning the times. And that wouldn't be wise today, of course. So we have Naomi and an example of a mother that we can follow. Let's go to Proverbs 31. I'm going to read this out of the NLT, Proverbs 31. But before we get all the way to 31, let's stop at Proverbs 1. Proverbs chapter 1, and notice what it says for young men to do. Chapter 1 and verse 8. That would not be right. That's Psalms. Proverbs 1 and verse 8. I was in Psalms. That's why that didn't work. Here it talks about following a mother, where the mother has a lot to do with raising children. And this is the point I want to get across here, where the Bible shows very clearly that the wife is totally, completely involved in giving guidance to the kids. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, verse 1. Now verse 8, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother." You can see husband and wife are very much involved. God gives the wife tremendous responsibility in a marriage. And when we find a good wife, and women are always going to be finer than a man might think, although in the dating period, when both parties put on these rose-colored glasses, there's about a year and a half from what I read where you're living on emotion when you're first dating. I don't know if that's still the way it is, but Preparing Rich is the one I mentioned earlier on. And all the ministers have access to that and have used it. I don't know if any of you were given that prepare. Prepare is, by the way, preparation for a marriage. Enrich is, or a marriage to be. Enrich is a class where you go through, it's actually a test, and you enrich your marriage. Now, you can never take a test when you're angry at the mate. Okay, because I've seen that happen where two people who like each other, and if you are you don't know each other that long, you've been maybe dating by phone for 9 months, you see each other at the feast, and if you take a test then, prepare, this would be the other side of being angry at each other. This is when you really, really just think the other party is 100% great. I never recommend taking prepare if two people don't know each other that well. We've been on the phone 10 times now, and we're on Facebook, and it's been a month. That's not good enough. But enrich is when, to enrich a marriage, you want the two parties to be getting along. So the husband respects the wife respects the husband. The husband would say, "Son, listen to the law of your mother." And the wife would say, "Son, hear the instruction of your father." You're backing each other up. You have that good relationship. But there is a law there. So is it wrong for the wife to lay down the law in the house? And the answer is no. The wife lays down the law. It's fine. She does her part because she's a virtuous wife. All of you know the Bible very well, so you're all going to know what the law is. You know what it is, and you can say, this is the way it's going to be. Okay, let's go to the New Living Translation of Proverbs 31. The New Living Translation of Proverbs 31. I don't think any, well, some of you may have the NLT. I find it a little bit more up to date concerning just the, there's no King James English, and it it puts sentences together that are more the way we speak the language, okay? So it says, the sayings of King Lemuel contain this message, which his mother taught him. So the mother's teaching, and she's teaching a king. She's teaching a king. O my son, O son of my womb, O son of my vows, do not waste your strength on women, on those who ruin kings. Now, she's not saying don't date. She's not saying a woman will ruin his life. She's just saying, basically, you only need one wife. Because back then, it was kings had one, and then two, then five, then ten. And we all know the Bible, from the very beginning, stated, the two of you shall be one flesh. Not the three of you, not the four of you, not the five of you, but the two of you will be one flesh. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, to guzzle wine. So a lot of this was on alcohol. Rulers should not crave alcohol. Verse 5. If they drink, they may forget the law and not give justice to the oppressed. So the mother says, well, you can really get yourself in trouble if you're asked to smoke a little bit of marijuana. That is going to affect you. Drinking alcohol, you can have some, but if you're out there dating, okay, there's a time to drink alcohol. I think it says for a dying man here, so there's other times at the feast, but you want to be very careful of alcohol. Rulers should not crave alcohol. If they drink, they may forget the law and not give justice to the oppressed. Alcohol is for the dying and wine for those in bitter distress. Let them drink to forget their poverty and remember their troubles no more. Speak up for those, then he goes on to say, you want to be just. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Ensure justice for those being crushed. Speak up for the poor, verse 9, and helpless, and see that they get justice. So you can see, basically, if you want to be a just person, be careful that you do not indulge in anything that is going to affect that judgment. Make sure that when you drink, it's at the proper time. Feast time, and hopefully we're not going to die soon. But it is very important. You know, speaking of this, we were in a region back in New York. Mr. Raymond Cole was the regional pastor at that time. And evidently, there's quite a few pastors, but evidently there were so many people who were over-drinking too much, he set a two-day limit. I'm sorry, a two-drink limit. That's better. You can drink for 2 days straight. That would be, oh, hey, we get to binge for 2 days. Yeah, a two-drink limit for a while. I don't know if you ever were in an area like that. That was a little unusual. But it's like in rarely two drinks, one beer on an empty stomach, and I'm not going to make good judgments. I'm just like, life is good. So I'm just, my brother's got a good liver. But basically, we don't drink over two drinks a day at any one time. I mean, there are days that we would, we would go days without drinking anything. And I mean, we should be able to go 2, 3, 4 days and not realize it. And of course, I'm not saying it's not, you know, that you can't have a drink of wine or a couple glasses of wine at night when you go to bed or for supper. But we just don't, you know, overall, we realize that we are modest in alcohol. But that was unusual for back then. For two drinks per day. I've got a friend who said, well, my two drinks were, and he had this big mug that had 16 ounces, and he said, we just pour that wine in. Oh, I think it was also a drink where it had to be only so many ounces. And I think wine was 4 ounces. And so he said, well, we'd start at 11:30 a night, and then we would have two drinks. We'd have the 2 4-ounce ones before, and then after midnight, we'd go to the next 2 4-ounces. That's kind of breaking the spirit, isn't it? He wasn't being serious when he told me this. It was kind of something he laughed at. Okay, verse 10. Who can find a virtuous and capable wife? So notice wives are virtuous and capable. It just tells us that's the way a wife is, and most are virtuous and capable. She is more precious than rubies. And I would think in the church, this is just the way it is. Most of the time, you would have a virtuous and capable wife. And that's how we would look upon our wives. Her husband can trust her. So here are some of the guidelines, then, that we find for a woman. And as a husband, we say, well, I can trust my wife. And she greatly enriches my life. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. And we look at our wives, and I think we can say, yep, that's the way it is. She finds wool and flax and busily spins it. We're talking about, again, a different age. But we're talking about people, I suppose, who go to Costco, is what it would be. In other words, she's like a merchant ship bringing her food from afar. And of course, if a wife has a full-time job, she is already earning money that is helping her husband and may not be able to have the time to spend looking for, you know, really, really good deals all the time because of just a limited time. But in other words, the wife is helping the family out. She is like a merchant ship bringing her food from afar. She gets up before dawn to prepare breakfast for her household and plan the day's work for her servant girls. Again, you change this to this society, and I don't think it takes too long to. How many households eat breakfast? Besides, I was raised with the breakfast, and we always have 5 pancakes, 3 eggs per person, and 2 oranges and an apple, and a little bit of yogurt, you know, like 10 ounces of yogurt for breakfast. All of you eat that way? No, we don't eat quite that much. I'm just saying it's a different society, isn't it? It's just really a different society. And we don't go that much either. We have pancakes once a week, waffles once a week, or twice a week. Once a week only. But again, it's talking about a woman who is really concerned about her family. She does what she can. She's not going to be up at 5 a.m. every morning. She's going to get her rest. Hopefully all our wives get their rest. But notice what the husband has given her the allowance, I guess, to do. Or just, I think it shows us here that a wife had a lot of responsibility, and the husband was not going to intervene. She goes to inspect a field and buys it. Now, that's an age where the husband is not controlling. You know, did I tell you could buy that new pair of hose? No, it's not that way at all. The wife... Well, one man I remember saying, my wife needs to be in. I told my wife she has to be in by midnight. You know, you shouldn't get married if you're going to do that. Because the wife, you're not the parent. You don't tell your wife when she can get in and when she can't get in. It's like, if my wife goes shop, if she's not in by midnight, I'm not even worried about that. You just, Marion goes out, she shops, she's back. I do remember thinking she went to the place of safety one time because the kids were gone. And it's like, where are they? You know, being a husband, you know, sometimes you don't pay attention, but I didn't know where she was. Well, she was with the kids at piano lessons. I forgot what it was. And it's like, man, this is unusual. Where's my wife? And, you know, we usually let each other know where we're at. It's not that we don't. And these days, we've got something, it's called a cell phone. Have you heard of cell phones? So we know. And by the way, we don't track each other either. I trust my wife totally. I don't track family members. And it may be necessary if you have kids to do that, you know, young kids. But you follow this through, And you just see that she is involved in the family. She's working for the family. She wants to do the best for the family. She's just busy working for the family. Her whole being is involved, and she has a lot of latitude. And that is something that we want to look at when we see a mother. And I think most women want to do the best for the family. They just do. Converted lady wants to do the best for their family. Okay, well, as we get closer here to the end, I want to take a look at Jesus Christ's mother and just show you what God said about her. We know that God picked Jesus' mother, Mary, to be the mother of Jesus Christ, of course. So let's go and see what the scripture says about that. This is in Luke chapter 1. Luke chapter 1 and verse 28 and 30. Luke chapter 1 and verse 28 and 30. Starting out in verse 28, having come in, the angel said to her, now this is an angel, I believe it was Gabriel, wasn't it? Said, "Rejoice, highly favored one. The Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women." Then the angel said in verse 30, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God." So if there's any example to follow, it would be Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ. Now, what does that word mean when you see highly favored? It is really interesting to just look that word up. And it means, well, God the Father is picking a mother for his son. So what's he going to do? Is he going to find the very best one available? Maybe even guided her, I would think, from the time she was a young girl and made sure that she had parents. Well, it would be the line of Judah, of course. So the parents were picked. All of the grandparents were picked, no doubt, and she had good lineage. So God set it up so this woman would be a top woman. But here's what it means. Highly favored would be graceful. Excuse me. Charming. Lovely. Agreeable. And acceptable. Now, That's something to follow. Being graceful all the time, being charming all the time, being loving and lovable, agreeing all the time. Well, agreeable, let's put it that way, not necessarily agreeing all the time. We understand there's a difference. Acceptable, though. Acceptable. This lady in any setting is going to be a wonderful, wonderful woman. And God knew it. The word favor, found favor with God and man, is used also, that same word, for Jesus Christ later on in chapter 2, where Christ found favor with God and man. So here's a woman that would find favor with God and man. Everybody would like her. Everybody would like her. She would, well, Pharisees later on may have called her a B-I-T-C-H, you know, because they said Christ was a bastard. So you'd always have your enemies that way. But if they were around her, they would realize how wonderful woman she is. So we see then this is the type of mother that all women should be when they or wife. And the Bible gives us these excellent examples. I don't think you see anything at all in the Bible saying anything against Mary. There's not much said about her. We do know the Catholics made her a saint, and also that she went to heaven, I think. But we know the Catholic doctrine is, of course, not correct. But when we look at mothers, when we look at the honor that a mother should have, you know absolutely that God gives those guidelines. And I think it's very important that young people should place their mothers, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, great-grandmothers, or grandmothers who give you pickles. And I say that because Jacob Golden got the last jar of pickles that his grandmother ever made. We should take a look at the women in our life and not only respect every lady and respect them properly for just being a lady, but also have that respect and honor that a mother deserves, that a lady deserves all the time. Because God wants us to do that. He's going to respect us. He's going to give us that honor. Remember, we're going to be the wife of Jesus Christ. And you know that Jesus Christ is going to give us tremendous honor. We should do the same for all the women, ladies in our life at this time before Christ comes.